So I'd say a zine, like the technical term, is something that's got less than like 1,000 copies. It's something that's quite handmade, DIY, achievable. The content varies vastly.
Whenever we've spoken about this, we always come back to intent and about how the production has to be non-commercial for it to be qualified as a zine. Because I think we know a lot of people who have got like basic staple kind of classic punk style zines, but have actually printed thousands and reprinted thousands over the course of them making it, especially because it's cheap to make. So I think it's less about the print run, less about the production, but more about the intention and it not being a commercial venture and it being autonomous in its like voice.
I'm Sophia Niazi. I'm an artist and the editor of UMK, and I work with Rose Norden and Hiba Lamara, and we are based across Somerset House Studios and Rabbits Road Press.
I'm Rose Norden. I work with Sophia and Hiba on UMK. I'm a graphic designer and an artist in residence at Somerset House and at Rabbits Road Press. I think what was really important about zine fairs, leaving university or just like coming to the zine culture, was that I met so many people who I wouldn't have met at school and like weren't necessarily like interested in the exact same creative practice or from the same or even the same age. So like I think what's so important about those spaces is the creative connections you make. I met Sophia at London Zine Symposium maybe 8 years ago. So, like most of our community have met through those events, and so many of the zines that we have now like come to follow sort of came together through DIY cultures or alternative press. So I think if you're not necessarily interested in producing a zine, but you just want to be involved in like creative or activist communities, they're really like safe and welcoming spaces, and like there's so many opportunities for learning and sharing.
It's often friendship groups or two friends working on something together, or a pair zine, which is someone just working on a personal project or a zine. But then more broadly, it's not always at the center of a group's practice. Sometimes it's just like a byproduct. Sometimes it's just like it would be good to be able to disseminate this one particular thing, so they'll make a zine. It's not necessarily always central.
A lot of zine makers are also the audience for other zines. And then within that, I think there are lots of communities within the zine community that branch off from other creative communities. So I'd probably, or maybe academic or activist communities. Within like Process Festival, as an example, there's feminist zines, but there's also sort of art school zines. There's probably more political zines related to like race and identity politics. There's music zines, which have this whole other culture. So it's probably one kind of overarching DIY self-initiated and supportive community divided up into lots and lots of other subcultures.
Some are recurring, some are one-off, some are like how-to guides, and some are like quite historical and archive-based. But when we started making zines, we noticed that a lot of it was off the back of Tumblr culture. Like the first wave of zines was very much to do with punk and things like that, and I personally can't say that any of my zine making's influenced by punk music, but it was very influenced by Tumblr culture and a kind of moment for people to communicate very internationally.
There was something anonymous about Tumblr that is unlike social media now, where you kind of are using your own name and you've got like a lot of, there's a lot of selfie culture where you're very, very visible and you're sort of curating an ideal image of yourself. Whereas Tumblr, there was just sort of a darkness that I really like. It had me thinking a lot about how you would pick like a fake name, like a, you know, just some naff thing, like a song lyric or a thing. Maybe just the way, like in the same way we named our zine, you have like this fake name, this whole like secret identity, but you're constantly like reblogging, resharing in a way that you're kind of connecting with other people that sort of creates this voice for yourself. And then on top of that, you are adding your own content here and there, and it sort of brings together like a zine with submissions. It sort of brings together this overall identity that is anonymous, but also always reaching out to other people.
it was the beginning of that kind of individuals who are not necessarily, who haven't been through an art school education, taking up the role of the curator, like curating their own page, making content for themselves. But there was a lot of sadness in Tumblr. Like people, I mean, it's the place where Rupi Kaur first started up, Nayara Wahid. There was a lot of poetry on there and this repurposing of like 90s culture. So it was cut and paste, but digitally. And the thing that linked it to zines was this need to, I think, meet people IRL, but also more of generating content instead of just reblogging. People really liked what they were seeing. People were being exposed to so much visual culture, and now they wanted to be part of it and they wanted to be creating it as well.
Like, I came from art school, but I felt really sort of burnt out afterwards, and then going straight into like making zines felt like this relief from there being any sort of formal grading system or structure or even any like overarching incentive. And I think like now people start zines with quite a business plan, you know, like they'll have like a really slick identity and they'll have a distributor before it's been printed and they know what they're doing. But I think we were really like, as much as we came from some art education in our backgrounds, we sort of were just learning as we went along, and there was such a nice sense of freedom in that, and we weren't thinking about who was looking at us. We were just really making what we wanted to see. Having gone from school and then going to like a graphic design studio that was all quite macho and digital, I felt like I was always having to sort of prove myself and like learn things and work really hard at things that I didn't find really valuable. So like the relief of just being around people who were like me and wanted to make things like me, I think it just felt like that creative process was really reaffirming of my identity and helped me learn about my identity and improve or like develop my skills as a designer in a way that the art school world or even just like the design studio culture just couldn't offer me any of that.
When I started working with Rose and Saba, when we started UMK, we initially wanted to make a publication about significant Muslim women throughout history. It's going to be quite Bill and Ted, but as soon as we started working on it, we were like, oh, we don't know anything about history. This is such a long project. I'm already quitting. So then we decided to make one about the creative women who we knew and using it as a vehicle to share our work with each other. And it just turned out like a lot of the people who we were interacting with were not Muslim, so it didn't seem sincere to make a publication that was exclusively the work of Muslim women. So I guess we're making it for each other, and it's curious people, I suppose, and creative people. I mean, the really nice thing about making a publication in today's environment is that we don't have the pressure to continuously or constantly have an output and to be producing content. It saps all your energy, and it means that you're literally just looking for engagement. You just want people to engage, and you're not thinking about what that engagement means and whether it's worthwhile. So the idea of having a zine, the main thing for us was to encourage ourselves and other people to take time and to actually learn something in the process of what they're making. So regardless of whether people engage with it or not, you've learned something or you've gained something from that. Just think and absorb and be a bit disconnected with the flow, with that relentless digital flow.
Like, we were interested in making a zine that sort of spoke to our friends, or like, and our friends were generally interested in art and activism. And I think while we sort of had an angle just that we were women and women of color, it wasn't really that we were targeting that. And we specifically initially didn't have any images of women in the zine. So we were making a point of kind of removing objectification and just focusing on content. So I think there we weren't targeting anybody. Just from being women and women of color, it doesn't mean that we're targeting that demographic necessarily. It's just that we were kind of trying to embolden our own voice as those things. But as time went on, I think we just became a little bit more confident about what representation could do, and that it is an important element, and we can push that. But it's not to say that it's specifically for the woman who is on the cover, but that it is specifically welcoming the woman on the cover who is not usually welcomed.
I mean, something that I've learned over time is where actually it doesn't matter if everyone doesn't care, and that's fine. And that's not, trying to figure out what success looks like for us has taken a while, but it was also immediate. Like, success is us putting something together. As soon as it's put together, it's like, wow, we put it together. And then it's just being able to share it with people. And the fact that there's been more than one issue, it's because there's been interest in both submitting to it and interest in purchasing it and reading it.
I think maybe it's just that we're coming from our own community, and initially it was limited to that community because that's the reach that we had. And then as it went further, there was no monitoring of it. I think we just kept going.
Yeah, and we're also really aware that a lot of people who connect with UMK or they don't necessarily read the zine, and that's fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, people who follow it on Twitter or Instagram or come to Rabbits Road Press, like, it's fine if you don't read the zine. Like, I don't like reading that much, and it's kind of expensive. Like, I don't mind saying that. We put it in libraries so that people can read it free, and actually, I don't mind saying this. People who ask us, we send them a link to an online version if they're really keen to read it, and because all of the past issues are sold out. But for us, it's really about the process of making something real that was an idea. And it's not just about DIY. It's not just about, oh, everyone can make, use Pritt stick and scissors. It's about broadening access to more professional ways of working. And Rabbits Road Press, I mean, part of the reason we started that up is because we found it difficult to get access to risograph printing machines and to learn how to use them. And we want for our neighbor what we want for ourselves. And we like to have superior quality materials and good tuition from people who are skilled and who've dedicated a lot of time and energy into their own practice, whatever that might be. So we're really for DIY culture, but that doesn't mean we're not for people pursuing things more professionally or dedicating more time. It's almost like a stepping stone. It's like getting into an environment. And I mean, I think the biggest reason why I went to art school and why a lot of people go to art school, it's not necessarily for resources. It's to be part of a creative community. It's to be part, it's to be able to talk to people and for your work to sit in a context. And that's what festivals, that's what things like DIY Cultures and Rabbits Road Press aim to do. It aims to mirror that and make environments where people can collaborate. Rabbits Road Press is a community risograph printing press based in Manor Park, and risograph printers are like, they look like a photocopier. It's like a photocopy machine, but the way it prints is one color at a time, so the final effect looks something more similar to screen printing, and you can blend colors. And it was really big in the 70s with community groups and churches and political parties, because it was a cheap way of getting color in into your work. And it's having a moment, and lots of artists and designers are using it in their work. When we started up the project, we were thinking about all the things that prevent us from excelling at art. And one of the things was space. And so Rabbits Road Press is like a classroom space. So there's table space for people to work. And the other thing was good resources. So we've got, other than the machine, we've got like Pritt stick, glue, everything's already ready. So everybody's on an equal footing in that way. When you come in, we've got all the materials that you need for your induction to learn how to use the machine. Another barrier is flexibility. So even though we're only open on Wednesdays, you don't need to book an induction or anything like that. You don't need to feel like, oh, I booked that, I flaked out, it means I can never go back again. Anyone can come in between the open access hours, and we teach them one-to-one how to use the machine. One of the other things is for reliability, for there to be a regular space that was open and accessible. So the press is open every week during term time, so people can actually develop a practice. It's not like a one-off, I learned how to make a badge or something. We say it's a community printing press because that is the intention. And it's also, people expect when you start a project that it immediately looks like what you want it to look like. So one of the things I would say that Rabbits Road Press is new, and it's a project in process and a work in progress. The way we work in the local area is through having the regular access on the Wednesday, but the space also facilitates other events like family cinema club a tech tribe, which is for school kids, where they learn coding and how to program robots and things. And there's a ESOL class as well, with ladies from the local area who practice their English together. And we work with other groups as well. We're working with a group called Maslaha, who work with different teachers in Newham and across London and also in Birmingham. So because it's a printing press, it fits into lots of people's programs really easily. Like they want to make a poster or they want to make a flyer. At the same time, I'm also conscious of what community art evokes and this idea of not necessarily good art and like collage and stuff like that. So we're really keen for the space to be reputable and like a respected art space, so that everybody who uses it, they know they're in a serious art space. So we have connections with the Design Museum, the Barbican we're going to be working with. We work with Create London, and that means that people who come in can see that like serious artists and educators are using the facilities and the space, so we can develop a practice and become real artists. And even though what is a real artist is, there is a sense of people taking your work seriously and you taking your work seriously. I mean, that's what we're trying to get. We want people to take their own work seriously and to develop a creative practice alongside whatever they are doing, and art not necessarily having to be the center of anybody's life, but for it to be a worthwhile, enriching, and an option for them if they want. For me, making is always about trying to answer a question that I don't know the answer to, and the only way to figure it out is to make it and to see it and to realize it. I think when we started making UMK, it was in the backdrop of there being so much mainstream media about Muslim women in particular, and a frustration with not being able to hear each other almost in that conversation, just to hear what other people are saying. So tapping into creative Muslim women and what they were thinking and doing, number one, it was a way of making friends. Number two, it was a way of being inspired and encouraged by what other people were doing and learning from them. And I guess number three, it was like, well, what if we get together and do a project? Like, what would that look like? And I guess the idea of discovery is always what pushes me and what I find interesting and exciting. I wouldn't want to do a project if I knew exactly what the end, the final thing was going to look like.